broadcasting live from atop the Rocky Mountains, the crossroads of the West. You are listening to the Liberty Roundtable Radio Talk Show.
All right. Happy to have you along, my fellow Americans. Sam Bushman live on your radio. Hard-hitting talk. This is Mitt Romney getting booed at the convention, ladies and gentlemen. He's saying thank you. They continue to boo, ladies and gentlemen. This lasted for like 45 seconds. It did not end.
So what do you think about President Biden's first 100 days? Now, you know me as a person who says what he thinks, and I don't hide the fact that I wasn't a fan of our last president's character issues.
See how long it goes on, folks? I'm leaving it on for a while because I want you to understand. This wasn't a quick boo. This was a continued boo disruption.
I'm also a fan of the president's...
Yeah, sure. My friends, this is the moment I was talking about. Please, thank you. Show respect.
All right, so now Mitt Romney gets help from the Utah leader of the Republican Party. He has to literally go on there and say, listen, this is what I was talking about. Now, here's the problem. The American people have been given no way to express their displeasure about this. Romney got booed like you would not believe. Mitt Romney booed during speech at Utah GOP convention 2 days ago. Now, by the way, if you look up Mitt Romney or Romney booed, you get all kinds of places he's been booed, by the way. This is not the first time. Okay, people don't like Mitt. People don't like socialists. All right? And the sad part about this carpetbagger is that he got in by hook and by crook. We'll get into this. Dr. Scott Bradley's with me. I normally tell you, hey, Liberty Roundtable Live, this is hour 202. This is the broadcast for May 3rd in the year of our Lord, 2021. What we stand for, we reject revolution, we stand for peaceful restoration, all those things. But I had to jettison it because this topic is hot. You know, I hear all over the country, why would you Utahns elect such an extreme liberal? We really didn't, ladies and gentlemen. The media got in bed with big money, got in bed with changing the laws to make all that happen. And now the people, the delegates who rejected Romney, now are coming back and basically saying, you know what? We don't appreciate you at all. We don't even want you here, Mitt. But they've been left with no way to express their displeasure. Now, I'm not necessarily defending treating somebody like that on the stage, but I am saying, what avenues do we have left? What are we to do? Is what Ammon Bundy says about these kinds of things. We have no recourse. We have no options, no choices. Dr. Bradley, welcome to Liberty Roundtable Live, sir.
Well, thank you. It sounds like a very raucous meeting. And indeed, it truly was. I wasn't at the meeting. The Republican Party left me a long time ago. And while I had played, maybe an inordinately large role in terms of how involved I was in decades past, they seem to have jettisoned a lot of things, and they've brought people like Mitt Romney along. Now, I know there are people in the various organizations of them that are very unhappy with him, but he's been given an overly large presence there. Over the years, I've tracked him and watched him and even written substantially about him. I've read what he's written, and holy cow, anybody that voted for him was either deceived or a deceiver, or maybe they were ignorant, I don't know. But at any rate, he did indeed find his way into Utah politics by hook and by crook, and I know people personally very well that say he deceived me. Well, no. You've got to do your research. People need to understand you must choose wisely when you choose a representative. And certainly Mitt Romney does not reflect what has historically been the perspective of those that are in the state of Utah. But In fact, back, oh, it was probably 15 years ago anyway, I was asked by an organization to write a review of Mr. Romney, and I tend to become quite verbose in my reviews of things because the documentation, usually I want to present it all. But there's so many things that we could talk about. His 30-year pro-abortion thing, he's the godfather and brainchild of America's socialized health care. I mean, his Massachusetts health care became Obamacare. He's okay with preemptive unconstitutional war. He's supported the same-sex involvement not only in Boy Scouts, but promoted it all across the board. And he became the godfather of same-sex marriage in the United States by executive order in Massachusetts as the governor. He created the first state in which same-sex marriage was not just legal, it was directed.
He basically is wolf in sheep's clothing on your right to keep and bear arms. He says, on one hand, I'm a member of the NRA. On the other hand, I'm going to strip guns of lethality from the American people. I mean, the guy's insane. But here's the deal. I want to be very clear because, you know, the nation wants to say, Utahns, what have you done? What are you thinking? What are you doing? We did not elect this guy, really. The media, in bed with big private money, literally got him on the ballot. The delegates rejected him, by the way. And so people need to understand that our whole system was circumvented. Whether vote fraud's involved or not, I cannot say. But I will say it's very, very interesting. And this latest convention proves it. You know what? They had an hour of fluff, wave the flag stuff. Lowell Nelson reported on it last hour. He was there. And then they basically spent the next 2 hours letting you hear from all the bureaucrats. And my response is, which bosses would want to walk in and just listen to their employees babble for 2 hours about their successes? Now, don't get me wrong. I think that, you know, we should hear from our employees on occasion. But at least in politics and in government, employees want to run the asylum. They want to run around and tell the American bosses to just shut up and sit down and listen. And so they're booing Romney. But what other recourse do they have? They were shut down as delegates, even though they rejected Romney. It was circumvented by changing the law and letting him put money into the ballot and get signatures and get on the ballot anyway. The media picked it up and carried the ball for Romney. And there wasn't any real debates or real lively discussions after they had circumvented the delegations. Now the delegation fighting back because they're feeling like we don't have any other recourse. We have no other choice but to boo this guy and show our displeasure. Now, I'm not fond of doing that. It's not very polite or kind or anything. But what other choice do they have? Now, we could, well, get rid of him at the next election. Fine. We've still had 6 years of abuse from the guy. But I don't know that we can not elect him now. He's got too much big money in the media in his back pocket to where I don't think most people can get the truth. They're just going to go, that's the well-known businessman. That's the guy that saved our bacon on the Olympics. Good guy. Put him in office. Because they don't get the other side of the story or the truth. The media rejects it. He's a carpetbagger. He's not even from the state. He's a governor. All those things, though, you know, build out his resume very nicely. But this is a quintessential kind of discussion about what's wrong in America. Even the people who want to fix it really can't. They tried to censure him for his abuse of Donald Trump and voting to impeach in the Senate. He was like the only one to do so or whatever. I guess maybe a few others did. But the bottom line, though, is this is where we sit, Dr. Bradley, to where people ask me, what is wrong with you people in Utah? Well, what's wrong with us? Our whole system has been shanghaied, sir. That's what's wrong.
Well, if we had a few minutes to discuss this, we could explain what went wrong and why. We are a republic, and what has happened is that the trusted representatives that we put at the head of the, at least to be our representatives in Utah, changed the law, which changed our Republican form of government. I'm not talking about parties. I'm talking about our representative form of government. And that's what the convention represented, was representatives chosen by people in their neighborhoods all across the state. They were chosen as trusted representatives that were to go to the convention and examine the different candidates and choose wisely in who they would send forth. The leaders of the state of Utah in their legislative branch and offices changed that so that democracy began to prevail in Utah. And when that happened, it allowed carpetbaggers, as you call him, like Mitt Romney, to come in with a lot of name recognition and a lot of money. And they came and they used that name recognition and money to get signatures on ballots, and those petitions that placed them automatically on the ballot. And by that process, they were then because of their money, their name recognition, everything, were elected by the democracy, if you will, of the state. The trusted representatives were shunted and completely moved out of the way. It had worked forever. We could cover every single aspect of the founding of this nation. It has in every instance been a republic with trusted representatives that people select because of their wisdom and understanding and everything like that. Everything from the guys that did the Declaration of Independence through the Constitution Convention, through the ratification process, through the process of election of those that sit in office, through the Electoral College, every single step of the way, and that has been completely jettisoned because of the Utah legislature being overtaken by those that wanted to take the power away from this Republican form and destroy the Republican form of government. Now, you need to understand a few things, though, too. The American Founding Fathers, in the first Constitution, the Articles of Confederation, had recall. That means they could call back someone that was a representative in the national legislature. Sounds like we got to take a break. Holy cow.
Amen to that. Time flies when you're having fun and talking about things that matter most. Ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you the whole system of elections is being shanghaied in Utah and across this grand republic. And we're being turned into a democracy line by line. Dr. Bradley documenting the proof. When we get back, we'll talk about recalls, a vital function, a last step, if you will, being circumvented as well. We'll talk about it in seconds.
Okay, girls, about finished with your lesson on money?
Daddy, what is a buy-sell spread for gold coins?
Well, when you sell a gold coin to a coin shop that's worth, say, $1,200, you don't actually get $1,200. But don't worry, we're members of UPMA now, so we don't have to worry about that.
Daddy, what if somebody steals our gold?
We don't have any gold at the house. It's stored safely in the UPMA vault, securely and insured.
But the S&P 500 outperformed gold. Daddy, gold is a bad investment.
Some people do think of it that way, but actually, gold is money. And as members of the United Precious Metals Association, we can use our gold at any store, just like a credit card. Or I can ask them to drop it right into Mommy and Daddy's bank account, because we're a UPMA member family. Find out more at upma.org. That's upma.org.
Why don't we say to the government writ large that they have to spend a little bit less? Anybody ever had less money this year than you had last? Anybody better have a 1% pay cut? You deal with it. That's what government needs, a 1% pay cut. If you take a 1% pay cut across the board, you have more than enough money to actually pay for the disaster relief. But nobody's going to do that because they're fiscally irresponsible. Who are they? Republicans. Who are they? Democrats. Who are they? Virtually the whole body is careless and reckless with your money. So the money will not be offset by cuts anywhere. The money will be added to the debt. And there will be a day of reckoning. What's the day of reckoning? The day of reckoning may well be the collapse of the stock market. The day of reckoning may be the collapse of the dollar. When it comes, I can't tell you exactly, but I can tell you it has happened repeatedly in history when countries ruin their currency.
All right, we're back, ladies and gentlemen. The recall was discussed and rejected, constitutionally speaking, in the United States. Let's talk about this, Dr. Bradley.
Well, okay, I know a lot of people, and probably Ammon Bundy would be one of them, and certainly most of the people that are in favor of rewriting our Constitution and having a Constitution Convention are in favor of it, but they need to look at an historical perspective. There, you know, we can tell the future from the past if we're willing to learn from that. And what had happened during the Revolutionary period and the writing of the Articles of Confederation, which was the first Constitution of the United States, they had a recall capability in that document, which meant that if your representative was out there, you could bring him back home any time and replace him. Well, they had found through experience, through sad experience, because actually they acted like the this Constitution was ratified and in effect during basically the whole Revolutionary War. It didn't get really ratified until the end, but they operated as though it were such. And what they found was that by recalling constantly those that they had put in office, they created a whole turmoil and lacked continuity in their government, and it really kept them from being able to operate effectively, and they've nearly lost the Revolutionary War because of some of the stupid things that were in there. Now, those that want to rewrite our Constitution are saying we got to get recall and we got to get term limits. And by the way, term limits were also in that document. They had experience. They rejected this when they got in the Constitution Convention of 1787, and they knew full well what was in their Constitution. They set it aside. They wrote a new one. Now, when there was, at the end of it, in its ratification process, there were many clamoring to get recall put back in. And R.R. Livingston, a delegate from New York, explained very eloquently and powerfully why recall would not and could not work and had failed in the convention. And I can explain that at some length if we need to. But the fact of the matter is, we've been down that road, and we found it to be failure. We nearly lost our country during the Revolutionary War because of things that were in that Constitution that did not work. We corrected that in the new Constitution of 1787. Most of the people do not have that historical context, and now they're clamoring for it. But here's the process. We the people, have a responsibility to choose wisely those that we send into office. And those that we send into office take an oath to uphold the Constitution. If we, the people, do not hold them to that by choosing people that will do so, like I said in the first little segment of this, the history of Mitt Romney is absolutely overflowing with failure in all the things that were baseline principles, and yet the people, because of an unwillingness to take responsibility for this, they go to the goodie box and they think, oh, what can I get from this? Now, I've run for the Senate a couple of times, and I can't tell you how many times people came to me and says, what will you give me if I vote for you? And so we are selling our votes to those that are sending us into a tyranny, a destruction of our liberty. Now, by the way, they do that at the Utah legislature too. Those individuals at the legislature in Utah that jettisoned the Republican form of selecting our local delegates to send them to be the ones that make good and wise and honorable decisions at the convention, we have sold that out, and now they let it go to the highest bidder. And that was a big mistake. And it's been allowed to stand. And so what needs to happen is the law needs to be changed again. And we need to go back and say we're going back to our original form of government, the Republican form of government that reflects everything that's happened in this nation from its very founding needs to be reinstituted. We go to trusted representatives that operate within the limits and bounds of their office. And unless and until we're willing to do that, we the people are going to continue to get people like Mitt Romney to sit in high office in this state. So that's
right, so
the problem.
Let's talk a little bit about the difference between recalls and referendums and all these different things, impeachments, and because they're all ways to express displeasure. And there's no recall in the state of Utah, justly so, according to the Founding Fathers' view. But in other places, they have recalls, but they have referendums and all kinds of other ways where the people try to insert their authority. And no doubt, we the people have the authority. The problem is when you go about it wrong, then you end up with a democracy that circumvents the republic. And you go about letting the media drive the discourse. You let people who have big money drive the narrative. And so that's the danger. That's the fear. Highlight, Dr. Bradley, if you would, please, the difference here so people kind of understand, wait a minute, we have control, don't we? Ultimately, we have the say. Yes, but through processes that stabilize the republic, don't destabilize. Processes that create a standard of consistency as opposed to kind of an anarchy type, we're angry and we're going to riot till we get our will idea. I mean, that's the balance we're talking about, right?
Well, it is indeed, and that's why we must choose wisely. A senator's there for 6 years, for crying out loud. They were to be well-seasoned, well-principled. they were, you know, they have an older requirement. I mean, I think 35 years old today is maybe the new 18-year-old. I don't know the way we're doing things. But the fact of the matter is that we have processes by which people are removed from office. Each house can remove their membership by 2/3. The president and all others, vice president, civil officers, can be removed by impeachment. The House has the sole power of impeachment. The idea that the Senate tries that, I mean, there's a deliberative process that goes into this kind of thing. And, you know, treason has processes by which, I mean, I'm just kind of running through the Constitution in my mind here of the ways that different things could be done. But absolutely, sometimes we make bad choices. I mean, it's kind of like getting in a bad marriage or something like that. People need to choose wisely. You don't look in the wrong places for people. And you know, I knew a woman that was very active in politics many years ago, and she talked of Mitt Romney as he was eye candy. Well, if you're choosing eye candy to be your representative, and the baseline inside principles are rotten to the core, how are you going to end up with good things? And so we've got to learn the processes. We've got to examine the hearts and minds. And by the way, that is what the trusted representatives, the caucus process is what I'm talking about. Some of your listeners probably are not familiar with that kind of thing, that if they're outside the state of Utah. But historically, as part of a Republican process there, that every year, well, every election year, the people met in their neighborhoods. They called them caucuses. They chose people out of their own ranks, people that they knew, people they might have went to church with, that were business people, that were individuals that they had interaction with on the street. And they chose people that that was the theory. They would choose people that were good and wise and honest, that they could elect to be a delegate. They would elect them both to the county convention as well as to the state convention. These good and wise and honest and honorable representatives of the people in the neighborhoods were tasked with the responsibility of examining each of the potential candidates. They were to get with them, talk with them, look at their platforms, have interaction with them, and basically grill them to find out where the heck they were coming from and what they were doing. And from that information, they reported back to their caucuses. I mean, you know, many years I was a delegate from it elected in this process, and report back to their caucuses. Okay, here's what I found. Here's what Mitt Romney stands for. Here's what his history is. Here's what his background is. Here's what I believe where he is taking this. He's got books out. He's got statements he's made. All of these things need to be taken into consideration by these honorable delegates. Then they go to the convention and they vote there as to who will be selected to maybe go to a primary, and then from that primary, if they couldn't bring somebody out of the convention with a clear majority, then they would have them selected in primaries. What the state legislature did in Utah is they said, oh, that's all well and good, but if you can get enough signatures, democratic process, on a petition, you automatically go on the ballot. And then so those that have purchased, they oftentimes will collect signatures via a process where they pay people to collect signatures. Okay, so if you can pay enough money, let's say you're paying $4 a signature to somebody to go around and get it, they're motivated. You know, you get 2,000 signatures, you know, made pretty good money for a week. Sounds like we got to take another break.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's how it kind of works. That's how it is. And let me remind you, we must talk about this as well. The senators are now elected by the people, and we've now circumvented the delegate process in Utah. And then we want to use recall to change that. But yet the senators used to be state representatives representing us at the federal discussion. Let's talk about that in seconds.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
You
USA Radio News with Lance Pride.
Secretary of State Anthony Blinken is meeting with G7 foreign ministers and the United Kingdom this week to plan the G7 summit in Southwest England next month. Chinese aggression is on the docket.
I think what we've witnessed over the last several years is China acting more repressively at home and more aggressively abroad. That is a fact.
Secretary Blinken on CBS News. Officials in San Diego, California report at least four people died and many were injured when a human smuggler's overloaded vessel broke off the coast. The debris field washed up on Point Loma after it disintegrated on a reef Sunday morning. We all know getting the COVID-19 vaccine has some skeptics. Some companies in America are ready to reward you with your proof of vaccination. Special offers from Budweiser, Junior's Cheesecake, Krispy Kreme, Nathan's Hot Dogs, Staples, Office Depot, and White Castle are just a few making special offers. USA Radio News.
Hello, this is Wayne Alaroot for our newest sponsor, Asset Strategies, or ASI for short. ASI is a precious metals powerhouse. They sell gold and silver. Never in history has there been a more important moment to buy gold and silver. ASI has been in business for 39 years. They've served over 20,000 clients and sold $5 billion worth of gold, silver, and precious metals with zero complaints. Last year, gold saw gains of 25%. Silver nearly doubled gold's performance. Now Democrats are in charge. Green New Deal, open borders, free healthcare for illegals. Bail out broke cities and states. The debt is about to go through the stratosphere. The time to buy is now. The owners of ASI, Michael and Rich Chekin, have been my close personal friends for 16 years. ASI is the company I trust when it comes to buying and selling precious metals. Call now to receive a free consultation and a free 1 ounce silver eagle with every qualifying purchase when you mention the Wayne Alaroot Show. Call 800-831-0007. That's 800-831-0007. Or visit assetstrategies.com.
Average gasoline prices have risen 2 cents in the last week and now stand at $2.89 a gallon. From the Texas USA Radio News Bureau, John Clemens reports.
That $2.89 is a fresh multi-year high as the COVID-19 recovery continues to fuel gasoline demand. Patrick DeHaan of GasBuddy.com tells us the future holds even higher prices.
Motorists can expect prices to continue inching higher in the coming days. Gas Buddy data shows that gasoline demand last week rebounded sharply. Overall, it's that increase in gasoline demand that will likely continue to push prices up as we head towards the start of the summer driving season, just several weeks away in Memorial Day weekend.
Federal and state taxes will present even higher prices at the pumps. Medina Spirit won the Kentucky Derby Saturday, upsetting the top favorites in the field to win the 147th running of the roses at Churchill Downs. This is USA Radio News.
Dr. Scott Bradley, freedomsrisingsun.com with me. The 17th Amendment to the state or to the United States Constitution changed the affairs of the nation to direct election of the United States senators in each state. The amendment supersedes, they say, Article 3, Clauses 1 and 2 of the United States Constitution, under which senators were elected by state legislatures. It also changed the way vacancies would be filled. Originally, the Constitution required state legislatures to fill Senate vacancies. That's all changed. And I submit this has a lot to do with the problems we're facing in this regard as well, Dr. Bradley.
Well, absolutely. Actually, it was Article 1, Section 3 that was changed by the 17th Amendment. And basically, you can read about this stuff in the 39th Federalist Paper if you're interested, wherein they talk about their interest in dividing and subdividing power, not only within the government itself, from the legislative, executive, and judicial, and bicameral house, and all of these kinds of things. The founding thought the idea behind the Constitution was that it was to control human nature to accrue and then begin to abuse power. So they divided and subdivided it within the government, but within also they divided and subdivided it within sources of power. So the House was to get their power from the people, the Senate from the states, if you will. The president had a very interesting kind of a compound methodology through the Electoral College how to do that. And of course, the judges and the approval process and the through the executive and the legislature, all of those kinds of things testify of their desire to divide and subdivide power. Now, because the House gets their power from the people, they also have the shortest term of office because it is probably the most powerful. You get the people's voice behind something and suddenly it's whacked out. Everything's, oh man, we got to listen to the people. Plus they have the power of the purse. But the Senate, on the other hand, got their power because they were appointed by the state legislatures. Those state legislatures had a seat at the national government or the general government level because they were represented there. But they also had to have a national perspective, if you will, as a senator. They could not have only a state perspective because that would just have a, I mean, there's so many factions in states. And by the way, that's one of the arguments Livingston used against recall when he spoke against it. He says, what happens if in New England states our fisheries are being attacked and acts of war are happening by the British Navy with their strength and everything? We can't get out and do the fishery stuff. And so by those acts of war, the nation needs to go to war to defend its rights. But the people in Georgia are saying, no, that ain't our problem. No, that's a New England problem. Well, the senator from Georgia had to be able to say, this is a national issue that we have to get engaged in. Because if they had recall, the senator from Georgia could have been pulled home if he voted for what was necessary for the nation. So all of these things were a delicately balanced, intricately woven tapestry of power and ambition against ambition and all these kinds of things. And so what happened when the 17th Amendment came is that they destroyed that dynamic by giving the senators the voice of the people also. So the rabble, if you will, that were clamoring for all of the benefits of some gimme, gimme, gimme goodie box, it suddenly came into that. And we can demonstrate this very clearly by the national debt. In fact, in 1800, the national debt per capita was $15 and change. Now, let's not just jump to now, but in 1900, it was $28 and change because the senators took that rabble-driven budget stuff out of it as it came to them. But in 1913, we got the 17th Amendment, and now our per capita debt, I haven't looked at it today, it's probably $70,000 per capita now. Went from $15 in 1800 to $28 in 1900 to today, just 120 years later, $70,000, because the Senate is elected by the same voice of the same people. We can see how they have destroyed that balance that was there to begin with. So, any rate, yes, you're absolutely right. That 17th Amendment is an egregious violation. And by the way, I may just parenthetically...
And it's two egregious violations, really. It's one, having the people elect the Senate, moving us straighter to a democracy, which means the states literally have no representation now. And secondly, then, the way that the senatorial vacancies were filled used to be legislative in nature. Now, they've tossed that to the executive branches primarily, right?
Well, there's some things that happen within the states on the way the senators are appointed if they get out of office. But they do have elections on the next available election to take care of that. So there's truncated or shortened terms of office in there. And by the way, that's exactly what's happening in Georgia with the there's going to be a senator that was elected in 2020 election that slot or that office in the Senate. And so that's going to be a really hotly contended Senate race that I think Trump and others are going to be pushing hard for to make sure that the Senate doesn't stay in the hands of the Democrats.
But I would submit the state legislative bodies should be the ones to deal with that vacancy, fulfilling of that vacancy, not an executive person or somebody else with a shortened election cycle. Because what you do is you manipulate the process like that. You give somebody an incumbent status by an individual as opposed to a broad body of people who would vet that next appointment, etc. So there's a lot of game playing that takes place there via the 17th Amendment as well.
And again, as I was going to parenthetically remark, there are many people that are looking to change the Constitution through a convention. And they say, oh, Bradley, you're so worried for nothing. There's going to still have to be 3/4 of the states will approve any changes we make. That is, if they don't change the approval process, which they did in the first convention. But let's just say they don't. Three-quarters of the states would never be stupid enough to do that. Oh, yeah? Do you remember the 14th Amendment? Do you remember the 16th Amendment? Do you remember the 17th Amendment? Do you remember the 18th Amendment? All of those were approved by three-quarters of the states, and every one of them has proven to be just an absolute flaming failure. And three-quarters of the states did that. So, yes, you can have three-quarters of the states make a bad decision. And by the way, in 1913, when so many of these things happened, the nation had a far better understanding of constitutional limits and bounds than we currently have. 100 years later, 100-plus years later, we have become, I would venture to guess, that 150 years ago, elementary children had a better understanding of constitutional principles than is currently had by those that hold the highest offices in this nation. So yeah, we could try and write a new through a new convention or through some other amendment process things that would not be protected because of the three-quarter states, you know, that are applying and ratifying it. So we need to be very careful when we turn people loose that have not the slightest clue of appropriate governance. I oftentimes refer to the Franco-Prussian War and the communist commune that ran Paris after, and it's like they were totally incapable of governance. And I find a lot of parallels between that and what currently sits in our highest offices in government. Rare indeed.
Oh, man, you're saying I'm not supposed to get excited about recalls. I was getting all excited that we could recall everybody and just fix the country all in one big old massive anarchist recall. Oh, shame. See, that's what they want to do in California, too. What you need to do is elect the next governor. If they're guilty of crimes, we need to look at impeaching them, etc. There's ways to do this, folks, but you can't do it democracy style. That's what I'm trying to highlight. You can't get all excited and then just mob rule, run around and do what you want, even if your cause is just. There's a way to go about these things that we need to understand. And the 17th Amendment really set the stage for this view that, hey, we can just as a democracy do whatever we want stuff. The states need representation at the federal trough, if you will. Not for money, but for understanding of, hey, we need the states to have representation. They have none right now. We need there to be a separation of how we elect our representatives. These checks and balances seem to be, slow and cumbersome. It was intended as so, folks. Okay, this expediency idea that we just set aside all rule of law and all checks and balances for the greater cause is a lie. This idea that we can just be a democracy and it's going to turn out well is a lie. And everything that they've done slowly but surely removes those checks and balances and gives the few the power over the many. And so your excitement about recalls, don't get so excited, folks. Your excitement about this democracy idea that President, or whatever you want to call him, whacked out Joe Biden, referred to over and over and over and over in his speech. Ladies and gentlemen, our founders rejected democracy. And we had a unique form of representative government, Dr. Bradley.
We did indeed, and it was well established even as the foundation was established with the Declaration. I guess we're going to take another break, then we can come back and talk about the results of this movement towards democracy in terms of debt. I understand.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've got to do it. I also have two other headlines I want to run by Dr. Bradley. That's just a shame. As we move towards democracy, we also move towards immorality. They are companions, just so you know. Liberty Roundtable Live, I'm Sam Bushman, Dr. Scott Bradley with me, freedomsrisingsun.com.
You know where the solution can be found, Mr. President? In churches, in wedding chapels, in maternity wards across the country and around the world. More babies will mean forward-looking adults, the sort we need to tackle long-term, large-scale problems. American babies in particular are likely going to be wealthier, better educated, and more conservation-minded than children raised in still industrializing countries. As economist Tyler Cowen recently wrote, quote, by having more children, you're making your nation more populous, thus boosting its capacity to solve climate change. The planet does not need for us to think globally and act locally so much as it needs us to think family and act personally. The solution to so many of our problems, at all times and in all places, is to fall in love, get married, and have some kids.
Have we realized the assault against our lives, our liberties, our faith? To defeat this assault, Christians and all people of goodwill should have strategies to prevail in our faith and principles, which are simple. No need for a complex formula. One goal, one aim. A strategy like the heroic Christians of the past. We win, they lose. Nothing less. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm by a friend of Medjugorje. The strategy of heaven revealed. Big Q, Little Q. The Calm Before the Storm. Available on Amazon.com or by calling Caritas in the U.S. at 205-672-2000.
Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Scott Bradley with me. We're talking about we're rushing towards democracy like 90 miles going north. I mean, we're just all about it, ladies and gentlemen, full speed ahead. We better pull a halt to that. Disaster. And I might mention that democracy and immorality go hand in hand. Let's kind of highlight that, Doctor, as well.
Well,
Jesus Christ comes. So there you have it. Ladies and gentlemen,
law,
this is serious business. Go ahead, Dr.
It gives, okay, well, the moral basis of a law gives it validity. And in fact, you can go back and review, and if there were time, some of these subjects we take are really worthy of review. It's just that they are truncated in our time so much. The Blackstone, the one of the great mentors of the American Founding Fathers, spoke often of if a law violated God's law, it was not a valid law. It was illegal, null, and void throughout all the world. And the basis of law in the world had its tie back to that divine law. I mean, and again, there's pages of discussion we could have about that. But one of the things that's interesting to me is that Blackstone, in one of his statements, this is, by the way, if you've got the original Blackstone, go to volume 1, page 120, and read about what he said. He talked about morality and its importance. Oh, and then we could talk about Montesquieu and how important morality is. But let's just mention this thing, this one quotation. Blackstone said that there was an appropriate time for law to intervene if someone had an immoral action. He says, no matter how abandoned may be a man's principles or how vicious his practice, provided he keeps his wickedness to himself and does not violate public decency, he is out of the reach of human laws. But if he makes his vices public, then they become, by his bad example, of pernicious effect to society, and it is the business of human laws to correct them. So thereof we could talk about prostitution, for example, and the immorality that's involved in then. So, and by the way, Montesquieu, another one of the founder's mentors, if you will, spoke of what a republic was. And, well, he spoke of all the forms of government that he studied, and he tried to put either a word or a phrase to describe them in the best he could, just in that very succinct way. And he said a republic, which is what we were supposed to be and should be and ought to return to, a republic.
Well, hold on.
One word.
A republic is what the rule of law, the supreme law of our land, says we are, though. So not only is it supposed to be, but by law, that's the reality as well, even though we seem to be turning our back on that very thing. That's why restoration, not revolution, is so important, Doctor.
Yeah, absolutely right. And for example, Montesquieu said, but well, I'll give you the word that he described republics with. It was virtue. He says, when people are virtuous, few punishments are needed. But then he went on so far to say is that if the nation lost its morality, particularly the women of the nation, and it's not because there's a double standard, but because they're raising the next generation, and the standard they set with their children will ultimately be the governance of the nation. But he said, so many are the imperfections that attend the loss of virtue in women, and so greatly are their souls degraded when this principal guard is removed, that in popular state, that's somebody where you elect your leaders, in a popular state, public incontinency, so that's, you know, violation of the moral standard, may be considered as the last of miseries and as a certain forerunner of a change in the Constitution. So what's at the very stake is our constitutional form of government. When we lose our morality, we lose our direction. And that is truly what is happening in the nation today. We have abandoned these baseline principles that made the nation the greatest, freest, strongest, most happy, and most prosperous, and most respected nation on earth, because people are casting aside this idea that there are limits and bounds within which society must operate, or else they end up losing their liberty. And by the way,
what nations do literally is virtually commit suicide.
Well, and that's kind of where we are on this path we're right now. You know,
yes, sir.
Ben Franklin said, "Let me add that only a virtuous people are capable of freedom. As nations become corrupt and vicious, they have more need of masters." So these kinds of things have consequences. And when the nation decides, oh, well, you know what, it's kind of okay. By the way, this is fostered completely in the lesson plan of the public education humanist religion schools that we have out there, which is you find this in the Humanist Manifestos 1, 2, and 3, and we can talk at length about them too. But they talk about the proclivities, sexual proclivities, for example, and how it's okay, there shouldn't be any limits and bounds on this. And we have been teaching this in school so long that the gender bender things and the ideas of killing babies before they're born, the idea that we're just simply animals acting out, based upon the Darwinistic theories. What do you expect if you think we're really animals that are highly evolved? If you act like an animal, you ought to expect it. I mean, all of these things are being fostered through a system that has been corrupted and is so different from what the Americanist philosophy was to begin with. And by the way, I talk a lot about this in my book, To Preserve the Nation. The moral imperative is one of the chapters. The idea of education and freedom is one of the chapters. The ideas of our spiritual foundation in America is one of the chapters. These things are absolutely essential for the preservation of everything that this nation has ever stood for since it stood up and marched forward in history after we got our Constitution. It's magnificent. But we've abandoned, and there isn't, I don't know, there maybe is a few, a handful at most, of people at the head of the government that even seems to have the slightest inclination of understanding these things. It's just astonishing.
Well, we can pray and we can educate and we can do all within our power, ladies and gentlemen. That's our duty and that's what we shall do. I've got two stories before the end of the hour, two headlines that I want to bounce off Dr. Bradley. First one says this: Biden, wearing a mask despite being vaccinated is a patriotic responsibility, for God's sake.
Well, he
science
said that, not
be
you.
Be darned.
Yeah.
Right. That's right. He said that. Science be darned, though. He says, I don't care. You know, you got to wear this mask, even though you've been vaccinated. Now, it reminds me of Fauci with the same agenda, where Dr. Rand Paul called this political theater. They're engaging in this dishonest narrative, setting science aside. Even the CDC says you don't have to wear a mask outdoors if you're vaccinated. Now, I'm not agreeing with all that either. I'm just saying, Romney doesn't even want to, I'm sorry, wow, Biden doesn't even want to go along with that, doctor.
Well, you know, I think Rand Paul spoke of it when he was grilling Fauci as theater. This is political theater. There is not a shred of evidence of any of these things having any value. And it really is virtue signaling. It's compliance signaling. And tragically, churches have fully embraced and adopted this concept. When they're, I mean, think for a moment. If you just look at science, I mean, these masks that you wear, and the best of them will filter down to 3 nanometers. I mean, that's a really small particle if you want to think about it. But the largest that a virus could be is .3 nanometers, 1/10 the size. Like we have that analogy of the mosquito getting through a chain link fence. But that is what we're doing, is virtue signaling for compliance. And the compliance is something that they're going to go for it to the nth degree. The vaccine is not a vaccine. The jab, it doesn't give immunity. It doesn't prevent spread. And they're
going
to continue
logic,
along this.
Now there's scientific logic talking about the shedding that the vaxxed are doing, where it puts the unvaxxed in greater danger of getting the COVID. So we're adding insult to injury with these scientific dishonest claims and et cetera. And you can see it everywhere. They have a different agenda, and it has nothing to do with keeping people well. It has everything to do with keeping people
compliant.
In a controlled, compliant environment. It's that simple. And that is a sign. People losing their liberty like that is a sign of a nation that turns its back on the morality reality that we talk about. We've moved more towards a democracy, and we move more towards immorality as two companion train tracks, if you will. Now, I'll give you the point. Manhattan District Attorney, guy's name is Cy Vance Jr., he announced on Wednesday that the city will no longer prosecute prostitution and unlicensed massage. That's according to a press release from the Manhattan District Attorney's Office. This is the kind of immorality we speak of, Doctor, to where we're now just basically wholesale backing flat-out immorality.
Well, indeed. Sam Adams said the sum of it all is, if we would most truly enjoy the gift of heaven, let us become a virtuous people, then we shall both deserve and enjoy it. While on the other hand, if we are universally vicious and debauched in our manners, though the form of our Constitution carries the face of the most exalted freedom, we shall in reality be the most abject slaves. He talks about all of this freedom depends upon our virtue. You know, it's so amazing. Just going back to the mask for just a second, and they're all related, I know. But this idea, if there were time, we could talk about how masks have historically been involved in not only being anonymous, but also taking away your individuality, how slaves have been placed in masks, and the different kinds of masks through history, even in this country, and how diabolical this has been to take away the individual sovereignty of people. You look at the burqa and the women and the repression under those nations that require them to be masked up. And I think about this mask is becoming the American burqa, and some religions have adopted it as their sign of their Christianity and everything like that. It is absolutely absurd when you look at the history of masks and what has been done in the use of those masks to destroy individuality and liberty. And all of that is absolutely astounding where we have gone, and our president of the United States, so-called president, I guess I have a hard time really fully digesting that. But the fact of the matter is, wear your mask if you got the shot. Come on, what good is the shot then, people?
Yeah, you got to wear masks if you got your shot, my friend. One mask won't work. Vaccines won't work. You got to have 2 masks. Why not 3? 3 is the charm, don't they say? I mean, where do we go with this? They also say that they're going to open up cruise lines, ladies and gentlemen. But then they tell you that the CDC is going to lay out the rules in which cruise lines can open. They got to obey the CDC. The CDC is as unconstitutional as it gets, ladies and gentlemen. Where do they get authority to tell cruise lines what they must and must not do to actually even open and be viable? I mean, we have turned this country on its head, and we better turn to God and repent and pray hard so he'll heal our land. That would be my most clear, singular advice to we the people in America. Become a moral people, repent and turn to God. And if we do so, he promises us that he will heal our land and protect us from the COCO and from the bureaucrats trying to peddle the COCO for control reasons. For Dr. Scott Bradley, freedomsrisingsun.com, God save the Republic.